This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Brännström, top of the point. Left wing, JT Miller shoots. They score! Miller for the top of the left circle, fired it to the goal. Brock Besser tipped it home in front. Now here's Huberto, right wing to the Vancouver line, into the slot. Kadri scores!
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Garland to center, passes left wing across the Calgary line. DeBrusque missed it. Weegar clears it again. Then Soucy gave it away to Huberto, who shoots and scores into the empty net. Jonathan Huberto nets his team-leading 16th of the year. From center ice into the yawning cage after Soucy handed it right to him. And the Flames are going to take this one tonight.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks. Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks fall in Calgary 3-1 against the Flames. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. The final game of 2024 and hopefully 2025. Has better and bigger things in store, not only for the Vancouver Canucks, but for all you personally, to all of our listeners and Canucks fans. Wishing you all the best in 2025, but we have one final one in 2024 to break down, and it is a 3-1 Canucks loss. Satyar Shah, Bick Nazar. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. And the Canucks were in this game, Bick. It was 1-1 in the third period. They tied the game up, but what we've seen, a trend with the Vancouver Canucks, and we saw it last game as well, undo themselves with some poor work and poor coverage in the latter parts of the third period. That happens yet again. The game was tied at 1-1, and one bad shift leads to a 2-1 goal, and you have the goalie pulled, and the puck is given away by Soucy, ends up being 3-1. And the most frustrating part before we bring Rand deep into the conversation, and you and I were talking about this during the final, 5 or 6 minutes, no composure, no ability to put any passes together, throwing pucks out, not being the right spot. And it just looked like a team that was a deer in headlights the final few minutes of the game again.
And even in a moment, if we're talking about composure, right, like you get back into the game, it was only 3 minutes later
that
the Calgary took the lead, right? So you've done some good work to get back into the game, and the job's not done. And it just takes 3 minutes for Calgary to get this pretty premium chance there for Nazem Kadri. He scores his 14th of the year, and suddenly you're just back on that treadmill of trying to get back into the game, and they didn't really get a sniff in that final 10 minutes. You know, Jake DeBrusque has this wraparound chance. I think for me, like that's probably the best chance I had written down there in the final 10 minutes, and it was plagued by just poor passes. And, you know, there was that stretch we talked about at the beginning of the second period where it didn't seem like anyone wanted the puck. They were willingly icing it in open territory. And even today, that back end of that 10 minutes there, it was just like poor work to get into the, you know, area to support the puck carrier or someone who's going to win the loose puck, and it made it difficult and challenging.
Yeah, it did, right? And let's bring in Randeep into the conversation. And Randeep, I mean, it's one of those games where you can mention some good things about the team, right? Like, you know, they battled, there were some fights, you know, they were in the fight, so to speak. They were emotionally engaged. They came back and tied the game in the third period. But all that stuff gets undone yet again by not having the composure necessary, not making the plays necessary. And I get it. Listen, they're undermanned. But some of these mistakes, Randy, we're not talking about, you know, guys being under a lot of duress and pressure and coughing the puck up. Like, we're talking about guys not being in the right position, not having the right back pressure, getting caught up ice. And you just can't have those things happen in a tight game again.
Yeah, there were moments in this game where you're saying, okay, hey, you know, Carson Soucy's out there for 3 minutes and 16 seconds on a shift, but they didn't score on that play. You know, Calgary certainly tried, but Vancouver didn't break. It was the other plays where you're just, you know, you're out of position, you're coming back, and Mackenzie Weegar has a lot of time on the puck. You allow him to make that play, and you get carved in the middle of the ice, two defensemen way too spread out on that play. And then there's two defensemen on the same side looking for the rebound, freeing up the middle of the ice. The second goal, you mentioned it, you know, back pressure is limited. It's so easy for Calgary and Huberto to make that pass, that seam pass to set up Kadri, where everything's in front of him. That's not even a line change. It's just, you know, not having that back pressure, not the forwards just allowing way too much room. So there's a couple of, you know, moments in this game where the mistakes just compounded. And I think that's the moments. In those key moments, unfortunately, Vancouver defensively just kind of fell apart. So even though, of course, there's going to be challenges, guys, with Quinn Hughes not on the ice, you're going to have challenges of not moving the puck out of your own zone. It was those two moments on both of those goals where you're saying, all right, if you're just, you know, positionally sound on a couple of those opportunities, if you're, you know, a little bit more aware in that moment, you're taking away that chance. And I look at both of those goals and say, that's just, you know, that's just taking the turning the switch off there for 10, 15 seconds, and that's what costs you.
And both goals look very similar as far as how they get out of the zone, how the Flames get out of the zone and gain the Canucks zone, because it's just one pass, you know, through the blue line, through the red line, and just a D-man in the center of the ice, and someone's cutting in, whether it's Pospisil in the late goal and he dishes wide to Huberto, or if it's Peltier on the other one. Like, both had a very similar tone, so clearly Calgary sees something that they were able to attack.
For sure they were, and I think that first goal especially, because you give up that breakaway to Peltier, and Lankinen makes the save. But the fact that on that, even just watching that real time, and of course, you know, the replay, Juulsen slams the brakes right at the top of the blue paint, and rather than staying there and trusting his defensive partner to take that side and fight for the rebound, Juulsen commits to the left-hand side. So you have two defensemen on that side opening up the middle of the ice, and that's just the first mistake has been made. There's too much room to the middle of the ice. You give up the breakaway, and then what do you do after? You leave your side, you go to the other side where your teammate already is supposed to be. And it was moments like that where you're saying it's not many mistakes, but it's very, you know, it's compounding those mistakes. It's making two or three of those mistakes at a time. And that frees up Sharangovich to poke the puck over to Zeri. It's 1-0. And you mentioned the second goal as well. Just very easy on both of those plays. So even though there was some good, you know, you get a power play goal, you show a lot of fight in the second period. It's those almost identical plays. You're right, Calgary, on a couple of fronts, target that. They, you know, if you're not going to attack Uyghur with the puck pressure, well, he's a very skilled defenseman. We saw him make those passes. And I also thought, you know, they just scaled up that forecheck whenever they knew, okay, we got to attack these guys a certain way. And that second and third period, there was adjustments to their forecheck, and they brought the heat. Unfortunately, Vancouver couldn't deal with it.
No, and you know what? Like, the second goal, or the game-winning goal, to me is the most egregious one here. And we have a lot of text messages and a lot of reaction from fans, and there's a lot of frustration about the blue line. And we all know the Canucks blue line with Hughes and Hronek out. Like, somebody was asking us, is this the group of six defensemen in the league right now? If you look at the six defensemen, every single team is icing. Where does this group of six for the Canucks rank? Probably in the bottom quarter at the very least. I'm not, you know, I have to go through every roster to tell you if they're the worst or not, but obviously it's not a good enough blue line. But that second goal shouldn't happen if your forwards are doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Yep.
You have Garland caught up ice. You have Suter caught up ice. Dakota Joshua, I kind of get, he's trying to keep an eye on his guy a little bit. But you can't have two of your forwards, your center, get caught up ice, and neither guy's skating hard to come back. And then what happens? Kadri gets a puck out, and he ends up scoring to make it 2-1. I mean, I get it. The defensemen haven't been good enough, and they need to find answers. And we know management's under the crosshairs, too, from a lot of fans for the lack of moves they made to improve the blue line and what they want to see from them. But that, to me, is on the forward. And we can sit here and talk about Desharnais and Juulsen until we're blue in the face, but if you don't back check, you don't protect the rail, you don't skate hard and back into your own zone, you're not helping your blue liners out. And to me, that is unacceptable to have that happen in a 1-1 game. Again, I don't care that you have injuries. I don't care that you're undermanned. That's Pugh Suter and Connor Garland, two guys who have combined for, 20 goals on the campaign?
Yep.
Like, that's not good enough. It's simply not good enough.
No, they're way too high on that play up the ice, right? You look at Uyghur and Suter is kind of shadowing him a little bit, but he's not aggressive enough to really make any effect on his pass. And Garland, with all due respect to Kevin Ball, I don't think Connor Garland needs to shadow him, right? Like, this is a defensive defenseman that's further up the ice. So you have essentially Dakota Joshua in a foot race with Jonathan Huberto. We know who's going to win that. And Huberto's going from basically the right side of the ice from a Canucks perspective to the left-hand side, and then he's generating speed. And listen, Dakota Joshua is going backwards on that play.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's going to lose that foot race, but that's why having somebody in the middle of the ice, having somebody to protect the rail, and in this moment, it's got to be Suter, it's got to be Garland, it's got to be one of those guys. And to me, I think Connor Garland's just stuck in no man's land here because he's at the opposition blue line when this pass is made, and you're not going to make that up. You've essentially given up a 3-on-2 going back the other way. And guys, I agree with you 100%, Sap. There's nothing much Brännström or Desharnais can do in that situation. They're backing up. It's a 3-on-2, but why is it a 3-on-2? Because two of your forwards are caught up ice, and really, one of them might be in a useful position. The other one definitely is not. So it was, you know, that play. And even going back to the first goal, guys, like Carson Soucy is way, way far left.
Yeah. Covering nobody.
Covering nobody when his forward is also already helping him out. I believe it was Kiefer Sherwood, if I'm not mistaken. But there's somebody on that left-hand side, and you're just kind of, you know, parting to see for Pelletier to generate that chance and create chaos in your zone. So I thought the first goal, I'm looking at the defenseman. The second goal, you're 100% right. It was the forwards to me, and two forwards in particular.
Well, that play too, and I know we, like, they fought a couple of times tonight, and that looks good to you know, be in the fight. But I look at that second goal. Like, Garland goes up ice, and Uyghur's retrieving the puck facing the corner. And there's enough space for Garland to close that down. And I think the term that Rick Tocchet likes to use is mark that guy.
Yeah.
Like, be the F1, mark that guy, and try to slow the puck down. But he peels away, and as you mentioned, like, goes after Kevin Ball to shadow him. And there's your access point for Uyghur to start moving the puck out of the zone and have an easy exit for the Flames in that moment. And I'm curious to see when we hear from Rick Tocchet if that's something that he mentions about, like, yeah, we didn't close guys down.
And, guys, that's your second line as well at that point of the game. Of course, you know, we've seen Dakota kind of bounce up and down. But with Suter and Garland, you have JT and his line, who were in the positives tonight. They weren't able to get a 5-on-5 goal, unfortunately, but you start looking at what they're able to do and how are they able to limit the opposition. It's him against Backlund, and unfortunately, they couldn't score, and the 5-on-5 offense wasn't there, but at the very least, they're trying to win their matchup, and from a territorial perspective, they did do that. The second line's just got to be tougher to play against. And this was the strong suit of you know, Dakota, Joshua, Connor Garland, and Pius Suter. I know they weren't playing together for the majority of the night, but they're on the ice on this play. You got to be tougher to play against. And Connor, for the most part, has been that this season. Just let off there, and that cost you a goal. And it's not only him, but I think his role on that goal is a big one.
Well, and what this loss does, and we talked so much about it, where the Canucks are right now, and, you know, record-wise, they've been fine, right? Like, they haven't been in a position where they're really chasing the standings. Well, this is a regulation loss against the Calgary Flames, who now leapfrog the Canucks to take the second wild card spot. They have 43 points in 37 games. The Canucks have 42 and 36. So if they win their game in hand, they move back up again. But you're out of a playoff spot right now. And your cushion is gone. Like, we're no longer talking about a team that has a cushion. Their cushion is just to be in the race. They lose a couple in a row, they're going to be off the pace to be the second wild card spot. You're at a spot now where you're going to be chasing the standings if you don't pick up these points. And going back to that last game, and this is where I understand what Alvin was getting at when he spoke about the frustration and being glass half empty because of the points it left on the table. Case in point being the game the other night at Rogers Arena against the Kraken. You have 4-1 lead. Because if you win that game, get 2 points, you lose tonight, hey, you chalk it up to, hey, at least you went 500, right? You got 2 points that night. You lost this one. You got injuries. Yep. You can live with keeping your head above water. Well, now you're not even 500. Like, you're talking about being 1 point off, and now that means what happens coming up at the game against Seattle? You kind of need the 2 points. They have a back-to-back against the Predators. And when do you guys get healthy? It doesn't take much, Randy, before you're really chasing the standings, and the Canucks are 2 or 3 losses from doing that now.
No, and guys, I mentioned this during the broadcast. You know, 87% of teams that are in a playoff spot on January 1st stay in that over the last, I think, 80 examples. So the stats back up the fact that, yeah, this is kind of a landmark day. We've talked about American Thanksgiving. So is the turn of the calendar. But here's the thing. You mentioned all that, and, you know, they are in the wild card based on points percentage right now. But if you start looking forward, you drop a game to Seattle last time around. You get 1 point out of it. You don't pick up anything here. And you have Seattle on the schedule yet again. These are very important divisional matchups, right? Whether we think Seattle or Calgary can hang around in this race, we'll see. Calgary, I thought, was going to be one of the worst teams in the Western Conference. They've proven me wrong, and I think they've proven a lot of folks in the hockey world wrong as well. So you don't know who's going to be there in a couple of months' time. These are more very important four-point matchups. So for Vancouver, I feel for the players in the sense that this hasn't been a team that's been complete at all. There's been somebody hurt at some point, whether it was Dakota, whether it was Thatcher Demko, whether it's Elias Pettersson, Quinn Hughes, Philip Ronick, go through the list. But you still need to pick up points. Nobody asks, you know, whether somebody was injured in November or December in April when the playoffs are starting to be played. So, yeah, this is crunch time. This is becoming really important for this team where you can't drop points. So I think on one hand, of course, they can take a couple of things out of this to say, hey, the next game against Seattle, that team that you, for the most part, should have beaten, and outside of 5 minutes, you were the team that should have won that game. You didn't win that, but you've outplayed them. You've been opportunistic in that game. So you got to tap into that, and you got to win the next game. It comes down to they had a cushion to start off the year where they were in the top two, top three in the Pacific. Unfortunately, that cushion is long gone now, and there's a tier one in the Pacific division, and there's a tier two right now, and Vancouver's dropping into that tier two. So you got to start picking up points. You got to stop dropping them. Simple as that.
Well, just that whole sentiment here that you guys were just talking about, it feels like waiting for tomorrow to solve the problem, right? Like guys being out and you're in a bit of a skid and you're like, well, you know, when the guys get healthy, we'll be better. Well, you know, tomorrow's coming here pretty quite fast and it's game 36. And now it's like, as you mentioned, your cushion is gone and you can make it up later, but you keep delaying this process. At some point, somebody internally has to be the one that kind of grab this by the scruff of the neck and say, look, this stops here. Maybe that's Patrick Alvin recognizing that in the moment with the comments yesterday with Ian McIntyre. But like what's happening on the ice, it does feel like a lot of people just waiting for someone else to make a play.
Well, I feel like, okay, there's a couple of things where the coaches said it, the players have said it themselves. Hey, next man up, next man up. And yes, but you know, this is a team that has relied heavily, especially on Quinn Hughes. He's been their MVP this year. And when a player does so much, it's one guy's not going to make that up, right? And so I think the sentiment is the right one. Hey, we all have to do it. But guys, this is a special player that even though, you know, he's been all world to kick off the season, I think we also understand that the Canucks haven't been able to find and form their identity. So now, you know, moments like this, you kind of you lean on that identity to say, hey, one of our best players isn't here, but we have a style of play that we can lean on. There's a defensively structured game, which was the case last year. Vancouver doesn't have that right now. So it's tougher to find, you know, that hero, so to speak, as the collective was the hero last year. They don't have that right now because they haven't been able to find that identity. So, you know, in a way, you're hoping, and if you're Patrick Alvin and Rick Tocchet, you're saying, all right, I need somebody to step up here, whether that's a JT Miller, whether that's somebody on the back end, maybe that's a goalie saving a game. Or, as you mentioned, and you know the conversation with Ian McIntyre on that piece on Sportsnet.ca, at some point, if that person doesn't raise their game or that group of players don't, you might have to pull off a trade at some point where you're saying, okay, if we're at a, you know, without Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes, and in the meantime, you got to make a change. You need to add something to this lineup that maybe it currently lacks. That's going to fall on the GM's shoulders. So I think the next game, the players have to show that they're a part of that, you know, that solution without Quinn Hughes. But if they're not able to create 5-on-5, which was a major issue tonight, then, yeah, of course, the GM's going to have to look into doing something.
Yeah, I know the team is actively trying to make deals. They weren't close to anything as of this morning. We'll see if they get any closer to it in the next couple of days. And, you know, Randy, before we let you go, they have a game coming up against Seattle on Thursday, and you have a back-to-back. Like, I know it's too early in the season to sit here and talk about must wins, but you kind of have to get points out of these next two games. At least two, like you need at least 2 points out of the next two games. And the way they're going right now, that might seem like a pretty tough task.
Yeah, you need to pick up points. You know, you've got a team in Seattle, which is not, even though they beat you, like this is still a team. On certain nights, Seattle looks like they have all the offense in the world. On other nights, they can't generate anything. So you have to stick to your defensive, you know, identity from last year. And I know it's not this year, but you have to protect the house, guys. Like this is a, even early on in this game, I thought Calgary had a couple of really good looks. And the blue paint or just outside the blue paint was easy for them to get. So Vancouver's got to box out. They've got to be better defensively. And against Nashville, sure, yeah, they've had a terrible season. They've had a nightmare season. But we know they have the star power. They have the talent to beat Vancouver. They've done it before. So, you know, this is a, I wouldn't say must win. I'm with you on that. But this is, you need this, right? This is a team that needs confidence right now. So you have to play desperate in these next two games. You can't drop points. They're amongst the league leaders in overtime losses. you just can't be in a situation where we're talking about maybe a lack of composure or switching off in back-to-back games or three games in a row. That can't be the case for this team. They're too good for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the expectations are too high as well, although a lot of fans kind of jumping off the bandwagon as we speak. But Randy, great stuff in 2024, man. Appreciate all your time and contributions as always. All the best in 2025 and hopefully some better luck for the Canucks starting on Jan 2nd when they're in Seattle to take on the Kraken.
Likewise, guys, and always love jumping on post-game or on your respective shows. It's been an honor to work alongside you going back many years, but especially this past year. And thank you to our listeners as well. It's always a pleasure to broadcast Canucks hockey. So thanks for supporting us in 2024 and look forward to chatting with you guys in the new year.
Thanks, Randeep. That is Randeep Janda. And as always, the game review is brought to you by BC Honda Dealers. Now, Bick, before we get to the phone boards and the text inbox, there's a lot of reaction too, right? And I can understand the frustration for where the Canucks are at. And there's a lot of talk and focus on the Canucks blue line, right? And a lot of guys taking heat, Desharnais and obviously Noah Juulsen having tough times too. And there's a common refrain that they need more puck movers on the blue line. And I have no
disagreements.
No, like they need more puckmen. They need better defensemen. But even Eric Branstrom, people want Eric Branstrom to play more, right?
One of the first plays of the game, Eric Branstrom's got JT Miller up the wall or Connor Garland short, and he misses both of them. That's like one of the first plays of the game.
And if you look at, you know, the differentials, when he was on the ice, he was on the ice for only 29% of the shots.
It was Hoglander, not Miller.
But you're right, though. Yeah. And the scoring chance, the shots were 2-4-10 against when he was on the ice. A lot of high danger chances and scoring chances. Not a single high danger chance when he was on the ice. And I'm not trying to single him out. My point here being, it's more than just Juulsen. It's more than just Desharnais. Even Branstrom, a guy that fans love and want to see him get more ice time and talk about Quinn being out, give him more. He's showing he's incapable of it, too.
At 5-on-5, he got his point on the power play.
Got the point. His second assist over to JT, who got it down to Besser. So he got the point. But 5-on-5, getting absolutely shelled. The only two defensemen that were in the black tonight, Derek Forbort and Tyler Myers. And I think we'd all agree that Myers had a bit of a mixed bag. Like, it wasn't perfect for him.
Penalty.
But had some decent moments, but also on a couple of sequences, he wasn't doing what you want to see him doing as well, right? But overall, maybe not the worst Myers game, so to speak. But
Forbort was probably the best D-man tonight.
And if you actually look at their differentials, he was on the ice for 57% of the shots. Like, they control shots when he was on the ice, right? And same thing for Tyler Myers. He was in the 50% range. Everybody else, below 50%, significantly below. And one of their worst defensemen by the numbers tonight was Eric Branstrom, but also by how he played. Vinny Desharnais, similar thing. Now, Vinny Desharnais in his own zone, how many times does he have a chance to get a puck out and doesn't get it out? There was that one sequence.
Desharnais. Like, the sequence was about 2-3 minutes to go where I will say, I think on the first one, he's waiting for some support to get to the wall and then kind of runs out of time, just makes a play or just makes an errant pass. The second one, though, like, there's two guys next to you and it's to nobody.
Yeah, and so he's had a number of those moments. And even on the goal, Branstrom and him were the two defensemen. I put it on the forwards more than I put on him, but they don't close out space as well either. Juulsen had a tough night. And Carson Soucy, who looked like his game was turning a corner, looked like he was playing a lot better. Did he lose his confidence going back to that empty net goal where he gave the puck away a few games back? And obviously last game against the Kraken had a couple tough moments. It seems like the confidence he had regained has evaporated all of a sudden. He just gave the puck away again with the empty net goal to make it 3-1.
Just hasn't looked as calm.
No.
I don't know if it's as bad as we saw in the first 10 games of the season, but it just doesn't look as calm here recently, trying to do too much. And, yeah, leading to moments like you talked about, that empty netter a couple of games ago. And then, you know, at his best, like, he can join the rush. He knows he's got good timing on pinches. But suddenly now, it just doesn't feel that way right now with Carson Soucy.
Just not a great overall performance there from the Canucks blue line either. All right, a couple texts you want to get to before we get to the phone boards?
Oh, boy, man. There is so many coming in to the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Keeping coming. This one. This season is feeling like it's feeling worse in the dark years of 2022 because now we're locked into a core that won't win. this franchise, one of the worst in sports. That's from Kevin in Calgary coming in, 650-650. Jerry in Abbotsford, the passing on the team, it's terrible, horrendous. And that Susie giveaway, prime example, and he doesn't even get a look. This one unsigned. Susie and Juleson have caused 3 to 4 goals in the last two games. And the number you said, what was it, 7 goals now in the last 5 games against for Noah Juleson?
Yeah, last 6 games on the ice for 7 goals against, 5-on-5, only 3-4. The last couple has been even worse, too. So a real tough go for Noah Juleson as well. All right, you know what? We'll take your phone calls and more of your text messages on the other side. We are way late. We're also going to get to the thoughts of the Canucks head coach after a 3-1 loss on the road against the Calgary Flames. You are listening to the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. More coming up next in the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Post Game Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Now here's Huberto, right wing to the Vancouver line, into the slot, Kadri scores! The Flames strike in transition on a 3-on-2, and Nazem Kadri all alone in the slot beats Kevin Lankinen to make it 2-1 Flames.
And this is a play that starts with the puck on the stick of Mackenzie Weegar, who had the puck on his own stick in his own zone, makes the pass as Pospisil gets it to Huberto, and on the left-hand side, Kadri all by himself, where it turns to 3 Calgary forwards and 2 Canucks defensemen. The forwards get caught up ice a little too far, and the easy for Huberto to make that seam pass, just too easy for Calgary there, as Kadri makes it 2-1.
Canucks go on to lose against the Calgary Flames 3-1 on the road, and this is the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar on the final day of the year 2024. We wish you all the best heading into 2025, but not the note we wanted to end 2024 on, especially when it comes to Canucks games, but it is what it is, in the famous words of number 44, the original 44. Well, not the original 44, but one of the more original 44s, Todd Bertuzzi. And as far as, you know, where the Canucks find themselves tonight, and it's like we talked about before, we all understand they're undermanned. They don't have enough players that are healthy. They have a lot of guys that are key contributors out of the lineup. But there's certain things you can't allow to happen, and they just happen too often with this team, and that's kind of been the story of this season, right? Like, you go back to the first game of the year, 4-1 lead against the Flames. They blew that as well in the third. They end up losing that game in overtime. We've seen a good performance followed by that performance, and we just haven't seen this team really play to a consistent identity. What they've shown us so far is they're an inconsistent team, incapable of finding that consistency. At some point, you think a team is what it is. Now, obviously, not having Hughes, not having Hronek, not having Pettersson, those things are going to matter. But it's more about don't cost yourself. And now these are two games in a row. They've kind of cost themselves points.
We're talking about basic principles here. Like skating with the puck, can you make a good decision on it? And even when you have time, can you make a decision? And again, everyone understands that you're shorthanded. We all get that. But you can't live in reality where you say, well, if they're out for 8 games, our main studs, we're pack up shop, we'll miss out on 16 points. You can't live in realities like that. And the job isn't so, like, they're still professional hockey players. And if, again, we kind of did this exercise pregame against the Seattle Kraken. If you were mapping out the two rosters tonight, who's the best player on the ice? Like, before tonight's game.
Oh, I mean, yeah, like we talked about, JT Miller. We said the same thing about the...
You're probably taking JT Miller first.
We said the same thing against the Kraken game, right?
And if you did the first 10, you're probably getting 5 Canucks at least.
Yeah.
So if the best players dictate the results of games, you were kind of on even footing, even despite being depleted. So you play this out and say, well, That didn't feel like a really even game because you're making a lot of mistakes through this.
The one big advantage the Flames had, and I agree, I think the Canucks had the better players, but they easily had the better blue line. And they easily had the two best defensemen playing this game, bar none, Mackenzie Weegar and Rasmus Anderson. So their top four, they consistently had a good defenseman out there, a really good defenseman out there. The Canucks never had that tonight.
But it's still like required to go do the job and try to get points. And given what happened in those final 5 minutes against Seattle, yeah, they go get the 1 point. But tonight, like, even being depleted, the job is still to go win the game. And no task should be onerous enough for Rick Tocchet, for the players to say, oh, well, tonight we can't do it because we're missing a couple of bodies. It doesn't work that way. You still got to go compete. You still got to go get results. And the fact that, you know, both goals look so similar to me is a huge issue for me.
You know what? And I think that's a common refrain we're seeing from the text inbox too. And there's a lot of reaction there in the phone boards. We're gonna get to the phone boards coming up in a moment. Let's read a couple texts. This first one here, unsigned, says this team has been more entertaining off the ice rather than on the ice. Yet again, is what the text message says.
Yeah. Bill, this one, 650-650. They lose one of the worst games in franchise history. Come out with a dud. It says a lot about the character of the group. This mess is all on management. Start planning for next season. That is Bill.
Yeah, and this one says, starting to feel like the New Jersey step back season, like they had last year, right? They had a strong year, took a big step back last year. They reloaded. Now they're back up again. Fair point.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, look.
I mean,
fair point.
And
the output might be the same, but the New Jersey one was goaltending. They were a mess goaltending.
But the one thing they did was reshape their blue line pretty much completely. Now they had Dougie Hamilton injured for much of last year. Oh, actually, that sounds familiar, right? Injury, a big injury to the blue line. Well, he missed a lot of the year. Dougie Hamilton then, and then they turned over their blue line in a pretty massive way, right? Like they ended up
Marino goes out.
They end up also, and even no before last year they lost Ryan Graves.
Yeah.
Like half their blue line changed. So they started implementing younger guys, like Luke Hughes came in and played bigger minutes, and they went with a youth movement on the back end, and it ended up really hurting them. So they made a couple of trades. They sent Marino out. They brought in Brett Pesce they brought in, and all of a sudden their blue line, Luke Hughes took another step, and they got a couple other guys, and all of a sudden they look a lot better. But the blue line was a big reason for their demise last season. Their top defenseman gets injured, and the mix wasn't the same. Well, the Canucks mix on the blue line is not the same. Their top two guys are injured currently. And if they don't shore it up or get healthy, like, it's hard to see this sustaining. Like, you know, for all the points about the Canucks laid a dud tonight, I thought emotionally they were in it. There was like three fights. They were battling, right? But the composure wasn't there. The execution wasn't there. The confidence obviously isn't there. And there's a clear lack of ability on the blue line right now. It clearly is. Like, Brännström's the puck mover. He could barely move the puck. So, like, who tonight was effectively moving the puck? Derek Forbort, right? And decent night. But you're not going to win a lot of hockey games, Bick, when your best puck-moving defenseman in a game is Derek Forbort.
So should that mean, and I guess we've kind of seen this with how low event they've been trying to go here recently, but should it mean that they have to, like, fundamentally change the way they play to accommodate their reality?
You clog up the goal, do the LA Kings?
I'm just asking.
1-3-1? 1-1-3?
At some point, like, you have to try to get points here, and you have to try to be competitive. If that's the reality you have to live in here for the short term, become more a low event, become more, you know, face-off based if you're waiting for opportunities.
But here's the thing, though. Like, these guys are... And it's a valid point, but it's already pretty low event. Now they're giving up tonight. It was pretty loose. They gave up some breakaway. All those things happen, but they generated next to nothing themselves too. Now they had a couple early, and then in the third they had like one scoring chance, and it was like off the same. They had like two on the same Miller line chance. Miller had the shot. DeBrusk had the wraparound attempt.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much all they could muster of any real consequence outside the power play goal, 5-on-5 especially. But the chance generation is not there. And can you trust this team to play a tight, mistake-free 1-3-1 or a 1-1-3 through the neutral zone and defend and box out, right, close guys out? Like, for you to excel in that type of game, you got to be really good defensively.
Mm-hmm.
I know the Kings have their troubles last year, but their blue line was solid. They had good defensive players. They couldn't generate offensively, but they could defend at least. They made life difficult for you. I don't think this blue line and this team can defend the way the LA, this blue line, I don't think has a chance in defending and playing that type of hockey consistently. I just don't think they can.
Well, then it's like quickly you're running out of options
yeah,
here.
No doubt.
Right?
No doubt.
And it shows like how fragile seasons can be that, you know, two injuries here. And again, like they're really good players in Hughes and Roenick, but you still need a professional level of output. And if we're talking about realities that, hey, well, you can't do this, suddenly you're out of options. And yeah. You know, I do look at the coaching staff, and they probably have to try something different. Maybe they do things like a 1-3-1, and you have to see how it works. I'm probably with you that it wouldn't work, but right now, like, they're gonna have to find some solutions.
Yeah, no doubt, and doing something different could help. But my thing also is different doesn't mean better. Sometimes different means worse, right? And I think that's something to kind of keep in mind too. But yeah, obviously they have to find some answers, and we'll hear from the head coach coming up in a second. We'll get to more of your text coming up in a moment, but let's go to the phone boards and let's start things off in Vancouver, where we have Randy on the line. Randy, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight after a tough Canucks loss in Calgary?
Yeah, hey guys, how's it going tonight?
We're doing great, man. How about yourself?
Yeah, good. It's been a while. I've been about a year since I called it, probably from last year. But
welcome back from the IR, man.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, things are heading in the right direction, right? So, I mean, I listen to you guys every game, but
thank you.
You know, I want to kind of spin this a little bit. You know, I've been listening to the shows and watching the games, and I think everybody kind of factually knows where things are at with the team relative to talent level, relative to the rest of the league. But, you know, I think there's too much emphasis on the defense not defending. Like 2 weeks ago, it was we can't score. This week, it's like we can't defend. I think there's a lot of fundamental issues. And like, as you know, Sat, every goal is a derivative, is scored for a derivative of a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you do have to take risks. And, you know, I just don't see us taking risks on the offensive side, keep the puck in the other end, like really transition and go hard and fast. And for whatever reason, we're not, and maybe it's too conservative. I'm not going to blame Tocchet. He's won 3 cups and he played with Lemieux. Christ, he played with everybody. And, you know, I think our offense, like, we really need to get to the other end of the ice. Like,
yeah.
If you start playing in your own end of the ice, mm-hmm. the way we are, you're going to run around. There's no choice. I don't see the centers down low set. You know yourself.
Yeah.
You got to come down and support that.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't pin this on the defense. I just don't think that's fair. Yeah, maybe not the Colorado Avalanche defense or whomever. But remember, you've got to support your defense and, you know, yeah. play the other end. That's what needs to happen. And, hey, listen, Kadri's a hell of a hockey player, isn't he?
Kadri?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's terrific.
Wow.
He's playing a lot better recently.
Yeah.
Right now. Yeah, he's been great.
He was the best player on the ice tonight.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong about that. And, you know, thanks for the phone call. Appreciate your thoughts and Happy New Year as well, Randy. And I think it's a fair point. I think this blue line without Hughes and Hronik is a problem, though. Like, I don't think you can say it's not. And I think what we saw, to his point, I think he made a lot of excellent points, and I completely agree. And we talked about that third goal. Suter and Garland, got to be better. Like, I pin it on the forwards. Like, the game-winning goal is on the forwards to me. Like, we can talk about Desharnais and Brännström when they're trying to defend the 3-on-2. Could they have done a little bit more? Sure. But you're giving up the 3-on-2 because your forwards are making the mistake. But even you cited this a bit earlier. There was a play where JT's in the middle of the ice. He has the puck in his own zone, and he's just throwing it out there.
Yeah. Hacked it out of the zone.
Just hack it out of the zone. And not even like a nice clear or – I'll take an icing because at least an icing's a face-off. You know what I mean? Like, you take 30 seconds to collect your breath or whatever, right? Get yourself thrown out of the faceoff, buy a little bit of time. Everyone resets. You're kind of in position again. But when you just give the puck away at the blue line and they come right back in again, like, you're in duress. You're under pressure all of a sudden. Guys are kind of confused about what to do. And Desharnais, we talked about a couple moments he had to get a puck out. I saw Myers just throw a puck off the glass and out. When there was one play, I forget who the defenseman was, and we were both like, I think it was a Hoglander who was wide open. I think that's the Desharnais one you're talking about earlier.
Yeah,
like, he's
maybe
wide open, screaming down the ice, and just throws it off the glass and out. It's like, why don't you just pass it to the guy? You know, and those are the plays you're just simply not making. I do agree completely with him, though, that if you want to defend better, you got to spend more time in the offensive zone. But it also goes with how you move the puck out of your own end, whether it's your forwards and your defensemen. It's never just the one thing, but I do think the blue line was having trouble moving the puck tonight.
Absolutely. 650-650 into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Paul and Coquitlam, JT Miller hasn't scored a goal in 10 games. He hasn't scored a goal when a goalie was in the net in 20 games, October 26th. Obviously, his absence in there is included. You need to discuss this, Paul and Coquitlam. We mentioned this, that, you know, 5-on-5, there hasn't been a goal for JT Miller in some time, obviously. But, again, like, tonight, it feels like it goes to the point you were just making. It's like the decision-making sometimes is a bit off.
Yeah.
And, like, the decision-making for JT Miller in a moment was, like, I understand, like, you got to stick up for your guys. But, like, you voluntarily taking yourself off to fight Kevin Ball, like, that to me is just an odd decision.
Yeah, so is the message that, okay, you're going to go after one of our small guys, I'm going to go after your bigger guys, and, you know, it's going to be a battle here tonight? Is that the message he's trying to send? Because I'm with you. I'm trying to understand the logic. I like him fighting.
I get the message. I totally get it. And it's like a spirited thing. Hey, way to stick up for your teammates. And there's a lot of good qualities in that. But again, I go back to, like, the job is to win the game. And you, like, without Pettersson, without Hughes, without Hronek, you have to have the recognition that you are such a pivotal player in this game all of a sudden for your team. And you willingly chose to take yourself off the ice for 5 minutes. And I get it. It's for something like a worthy cause of sticking up for your teammates. But winning's a pretty worthy cause too.
Yeah.
And taking yourself off for at least five, to me, like, that's a misguided decision. Going on to all the other things that we talked about where, you know, it's like club selection in golf. Right? Like, you got to choose the right club. You got to make the right decision of how to shape it, how to shoot it. It's like all these things lead to the execution of a moment. And we don't see enough, like, sequencing of good decisions mm-hmm. leading to the execution.
Well, yeah. And, you know, and that's the thing, right? And Pierre from Courtney says, we're barking up the wrong tree. It's about the fact you only scored one goal tonight. We're focusing on the wrong thing. Of course. I mean, they're generating chances is something they need to do. But in the absence of generating offense, you have to play with more composure. And here's the thing. When you're not playing with composure with the puck in your own zone, how are you going to generate chances to begin with?
It's not any one thing.
It's all tied together, you know? And everyone's right. They got a scoreboard. They got to defend better. And neither happens in isolation. They're all tied together. And that's where the Canucks find themselves currently. We'll get to more of your reaction coming up in a moment. But let's get to the thoughts of the Canucks head coach. Here's Rick talking at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown.
This one not falling your way, but opportunities seem to just go back and forth tonight. Your thoughts on the team's effort?
Yeah, it's a hard-working game. A lot of motion. Guys stuck together. A couple of self-inflicted goals that, you know, that are preventable, but for the most part, I thought the guys worked hard. A lot of guys gave effort tonight.
Your thoughts on just the heat in tonight's game? Obviously, five ties piled into that penalty box at once.
Yeah, division rivals. It's the way it should be. You know, you got to love that sort of stuff.
How difficult is it, Rick, that you guys seem to come up with the wrong end of the one-goal games recently? I mean, to lose in that fashion.
Yeah, like I said, self-inflicted goals. We just can't give up a 3-on-2, and we don't play the 3-on-2 right. You know, on the 6-on-5, we were a little antsy with a puck. We couldn't get a hold of it. Yeah, there's a couple of moments there that you're looking for big moments from some people.
Did have some big moments, especially the
3-on-5. Okay. Great kill. That was got some boost from it. The fights, like I said, hard-working game. They made the most of their moments than we did. But for the most part, the guys worked hard.
Brock's got 6 goals in his last 4 games now. What do you think has helped him found that success lately?
Just around the net. You know, that was a nice play. You know, he's good at deflecting pucks.
That was the Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown. From vision to reality, Tiletown has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. And we heard the head coach there, and, you know, the effort was, this was not a game lacking in effort, right? Like, it wasn't like they didn't show up and weren't ready to fight. They fought, they were battling. They were in the fight. Their top players, forwards, I don't think played well enough. I think they had moments, obviously, they weren't good enough. The 5-on-3 kill, we talked about this a bit earlier. What a fantastic kill, especially in that moment of the game, to keep it a one-goal game and giving yourself a chance to go, you know, to come back and tie it at the very least. But he says self-inflicted goals. We broke down a 3-on-2 that led to the game-winning goal, right? You have the 6-on-5. Soucy gives the puck away. It goes in for the empty net goal. And seeing that moment, it's those plays under composure and duress. And also, they're not unforced errors. It's not like Carson Soucy was under a ton of pressure where he made the pass, right? It wasn't like the second goal happened from sustained pressure in the Canucks zone and great players making great plays. It's like you're giving them the space. You're giving them the opportunities, and you can't have those self-inflicted moments, and that's really what cost them here again tonight.
I do wonder, too, because he's mentioned self-inflicted moments a lot. And again, game of mistakes, it happens. But like when you keep mentioning self-inflicted goals, is that, hey, these players aren't capable of doing something? Or we're asking them to do things that they're incapable of, or like something has to change in the way we play to limit self-inflicted moments. Mm-hmm. So again, like it's honest there from Rick Tocchet, but what's the solution? Because I don't know if you can keep doing the same thing and keep having self-inflicted goals against crop up against you, and then say, we tried hard. Yeah, trying hard's awesome, but if you're making self-inflicted wounds, that damages the effort.
Yeah, it does, right? And I think that's where the Canucks kind of find themselves right now, and in a tough spot. And I know he doesn't want to be overly critical of his guys either when he has these guys out.
Yeah.
And you can't go to that well too much. It's just, it's tough to have that battle, that fight, and to give it away again late. It's kind of similar to what happened against Seattle, but obviously not to the same degree, and you weren't coughing up a 3-goal lead. All right.
I was just going to say, like we talked about it earlier, but it's that moment where they tied the game, and then it looked completely different after that.
Yeah, 100%. Keep your thoughts coming into the text inbox. We'll get to more of it coming up in a moment. Like this one here says, you guys don't know what was said to JT. Maybe it was personal. Hey, I get it, but words are words. And players are going to say stuff to you to try to throw you off the game. It goes back to the whole Zidane thing in the World Cup final where he had, but he's like, why? He dishonored my sister. I was like, well, great. You didn't win the gold medal. You didn't win the World Cup. I'm glad you defended the honor of your sister because words got to you, right? So at the end of the day, I think if it's words, I think you can handle those sort of things.
The Marco Materazzi reference cashes at plus 22,000. Holy smokes.
I'm just saying, winning is the most important thing. And someone does something physical, words, I think those things can, heat at a moment. You should be able to fight through those things. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We'll get to your phone calls as well. This is the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
This is the Canucks Central Post Game Show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Under 6 minutes left in the first period. No score. The Canucks and the Flames. Now here's a stretch pass. Peltier in alone to the backhand. He's stopped by Lankinen. Rebound there. They dig it home. Peltier couldn't score on the initial breakaway, but Connor Zary followed up. And he gives the Flames a 1-0 lead with 5:29 left in the first.
And Mackenzie Weegar makes the stretch pass, splits Soucy and Juulsen. Peltier going on the backhand, and Lankinen makes the original save. But then Calgary crashes the crease as the puck was still bobbling around. And looked like it was Sharon Govich who ends up poking it towards Connor Zary. And Zary just beating Danton Heinen to the front of the net to deposit that one home to make a 1-0 Calgary.
Canucks battle but lose 3-1 against the Calgary Flames, get undone by some mistakes in the third period, and find themselves suffering yet another loss. And this is the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Like Kubota, do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We'll get to more of your thoughts coming up on the text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. But before we go to the phone boards, Bick, what are the people saying on the text inbox?
650-650, unsigned here. Other teams have players step up when the Stars go down. And then there's our players who look like they belong in beer league, 650-650. No defense is killing this team, and Miller looks disinterested. Alvin, are you watching? From Bernie in Kelowna. And this one, Steve in the Ridge, I just need some positivity. Please share. So I thought about this in the break.
Okay, here. What do you have?
I'll put some positive spin for you.
Okay.
When you wake up tomorrow morning, the Canucks will not have lost for the season. Or sorry, for the year. They'll be undefeated for the year when you wake up tomorrow morning.
Undefeated in 2025.
Yeah.
This is true.
No, when you say it like that, it sounds too dumb of a statement. Well, when you say they haven't lost for the year, I mean, you got to keep it vague. Everything I said is factual.
It is factual.
But it's
only.
Really open to interpretation.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's not the past 24 hours, but the past little while, that's for sure. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. Peter in Vancouver says, so we want to pick on Soucy for a bad giveaway, Desharnais for a bad sequence late in the third. But why no criticism for JT for his bad giveaway in the O-zone with the goalie pull that we did talk about, numerous JT mistakes, giveaways? Why no criticism for Brock B for his numerous failures to get the puck out of the D-zone along the boards and even coughing it up? All players make mistakes on both sides and thought it was a good hockey game. The guys competed hard. That's Peter in Vancouver texting it. I mean, you know, fair points, but we mentioned those things. Besser scored a goal. Here's another positive. Brock Besser scored a sixth goal in four games, up to 14 goals now in 29. So at the very least, he made some mistakes, but there was a bottom line. And as much as JT made a mistake, he had a
provides an assist,
right? And those are the things that, you know, they did do well. But like we talked about, under pressure, Canucks forwards, Canucks defensemen did not make enough good, clean plays. And we saw that late in the game as well. We'll get to, what, you
no,
want to do something?
It's...
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm just going to read this text from Sonny. Obviously, 2 points would be nice, but this game was a long way. We'll go a long way for this team. Second period shows me this team still cares about each other, guys sticking up for one another. For me, that's a win. And, like, I totally appreciate the sentiment. And, again, it's nice things. It's moral reasons to fight, to do all that. And it's true. Like, they're sticking up for each other. That's awesome. But you're kind of running out of time for those, like, hey, at least they're doing these things. Because you want to be comfortably in the playoffs so you can make decisions for the trade deadline. It's not as if the trade deadline's the second to last game of the season. You want to know, like, what sort of plan of attack should we have here going into the final handful of games into the season? They're 60 days away, basically, from the trade deadline. And part of that is going to be Four Nations face-off freeze there. Not freeze, but it's going to be, like, no games in that stretch. So they're running out of time to, like, make an accurate assessment here. And you can't just keep doing this, like, well, at least they're doing these things, these markers that are nice and pleasant.
Yeah, I mean, and all fair, right? Like, there are things that they've done that are okay, but we know how much better this team can be. We heard Patrick Alvin. Patrick Alvin himself said yesterday he's glass half empty.
He's not taking a flamethrower to a bunch of players if he doesn't think that there's more potential here.
No, and he said, like, glass half empty with how we played so far this season, right? And this is coming from the general manager himself. And, you know, obviously they are getting Quinn back. They are getting Pettersson back. These guys were not out long term. But even when those guys were here, they would make some of the mistakes we've seen. And I think that's been the big thing that they're trying to overcome. And that's why Patrick Alvin, when he had the chance to speak to Ian McIntyre, didn't use injuries as an excuse. Because he said the things that happened in that game are things that have happened to us all season. And I think, again, in the third, similar things happened again, self-inflicted wounds that cost you games that have cost you in other games as well. And if you think that media sometimes is being overly critical, I mean, hey, you heard from the general manager. He could have easily killed the noise and said, he could have easily been like, hey, it's not that bad. We'll be okay. We're fighting through injuries.
He easily could have not done the interview.
Yeah, he could
have.
Right?
Like,
but he was truthful about how he's feeling.
Which, like, hey, that's credit to him for stepping up and doing the interview and speaking his mind. But now, like, once you put it on record, that's how the general manager of your team feels.
Yeah, 100%. And we heard Rutherford as well, right? Bob in Victoria says, stop the fluffy text tonight. It's not deserved. So Bob in Victoria is not happy with people texting in and saying, like, we read a wide... So
we try to read and bring you the perspective of everyone.
We do our best on the show to not just give you one angle. We try to give you as many as possible, and especially when people text in a lot of different thoughts. So we give you the variety, and so people's voices can be heard, because as much as people think fans are one, they're not. There are so many different segments. People have different opinions. Like, everyone has a different personality, and they interpret and watch games differently. So a lot of different takes coming in as well. All right, let's go to the phone boards. Let's start things off in Maple Ridge, where our friend Gary's been waiting patiently to get on. What's going on, Gary? What are your thoughts here tonight?
Well, first of all, I wanted to wish you guys are not a good new year, but a great one. Have fun when you're done here.
Thank you.
Eddie and I were having he's a pretty good producer. That's all I can say for it. What I wanted to say was this. I agree with you guys as far as Miller fighting that guy. Why is Miller doing that? Like, stay on the ice. You don't need to fight that guy. That was a joke. And we're also missing Quinn Hughes badly. But I'm gonna say something completely out of the box, completely different, and you probably will not agree with me, but we were playing our second goaltender, not Thatcher Demko. What is Tocchet doing? And in my opinion, just between you and I and the lamppost and the rest of your listeners, if we don't make the playoffs, I think we should fire Tocchet.
All right, Gary.
That's all I'm going to say. Have a great one, okay, guys?
Thank you. Happy New Year to you as well, Gary. Thanks for your thoughts. I mean, hey, listen, Rick Tocchet's taking a lot of flack recently, and when you don't get results and the team struggles, everyone's going to wear it. So, you know, if the Canucks miss the playoffs, there are a lot of different things on the table. Potentially, it all depends on how the season goes. And as much as the general manager also challenged the coaching staff to some degree with Ian McIntyre, who we'll talk to coming up in the next segment, he also said he has a lot of belief in their ability. So
I'll be remarkably stunned if the club option isn't picked up and all that is sorted out.
Yeah, but again, who knows how a season goes? There are a lot of things, but yeah, I still look at that as being unlikely. As far as Lankinen starting, I mean, he gave up 2 goals tonight.
Yeah.
You scored one.
And
I don't think that would Demko have been the difference tonight.
I don't know if that Demko performance on Saturday was the one that's like, oh, we got to go back to you. One goes right off his glove into the net.
Yeah,
like
the one was not great. I thought the rest weren't really on him necessarily, but yes.
No, but he made mistakes.
Yeah,
and if he makes one more save, again, I know there's mistakes in front of him and all that, but it is still 5 goals. I think we're going to get back to that 50-50 split here for a little while.
Yeah, but hey, the coach is taking criticism. Amritz says if the Canucks had a good coach, he would have rallied them after that loss to Seattle. Renfrew Marco says Alvin said what he said to Ian McIntyre to cover up his mistakes building this awful defense. So Patrick Alvin also taking it on the text inbox, 650-650. This one says, nope, terrible take, don't fire Rick. So Rick Tocchet is also getting some. Again, you get a bit these are live in the moment texts coming in, and you get a variety of different opinions, one after another within seconds. So that's what we're dealing with every day when we're doing these games. And I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying, people think all
trying
fans
to bring you behind the glass here.
Fans have different opinions.
Behind the curtain?
Behind the curtain, yeah.
Behind the glass works too?
That works too, yeah. I mean, it depends on.
It feels like bringing people into the shower. Let's come
behind
the glass.
Is an interrogation room taking
behind the glass?
You can't only see through one side of it. All right, let's take one more phone call here, and let's go to Terrence in North Van. Terrence, thanks for calling in, and what are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, guys. First of all, I just want to wish you guys a happy new year.
Thank you.
My thoughts, I just want to kind of, I'm wondering, is this season just lost at this point? Is it worth making a trade for Alvin? If we make the playoffs, great. If we don't, do we kind of look at the team in the summer and kind of make the moves? Because at this point, is it worth selling the future for a team that we all know is not great in the back end?
Sorry to cut you off here, but
go ahead.
Do you mean a high level, trade first round pick? Cause I would imagine here in the next 2 weeks here, you'll see maybe a depth move. So if it was Nils Höglander traded out for a D-man, was that something you said? I don't even want to do that.
No, I think that's fair. Nils isn't having a great season and maybe it might be time to part ways with him. But maybe a first rounder or even, some of our bigger players like Lekkermäki or Tom Wielander. I wouldn't want to do anything that big or that major. I think at this point, I understand getting the playoffs is key and that's number one. But, to me, just looking at the back end and seeing kind of where we're at, Hughes is week to week. Pedersen's probably at least in our week out. Hronek, he's probably in our month out. So at this point, we're kind of in the bubble on the wild card side of things. So is it worth, kind of pursuing a big move to make that happen? Or do we kind of look for the future and say, hey, let's look into next season and make the moves accordingly in the summer? But those are my thoughts.
Hey, Terrence, thanks for the phone call. Happy New Year as well. Appreciate you calling in. And it's a fair point and a fair question, right? I don't believe this team is going to be spending significant assets on rentals, that being a first-round pick or a big prospect on something that only is going to help them for a couple months. Are they potentially going to spend some mid-range capital on that, potentially? You know, I don't know if those things are going to move the needle too much anyways if you're talking about a mid-to-late-round pick at the deadline, because the Canucks are going to have cap space if they can keep accruing by the trade deadline. And they could be in a position where when they have cap space, they can get guys that are rentals for super cheap. We saw this last year where guys were going for like 6th or 7th round draft picks or next to nothing just to take the contract off somebody's hands for a few months. I could see them doing things like that for cheap at the deadline, and I can be okay with that in your pursuit to make the playoffs, but I do not believe you should be spending any significant assets on rentals. But I don't think you should stop looking to make your team better regardless of where you are in the standings, because if that was the way you went about it, you would have never made the Hronek trade. And I think if this team, regardless of where they are in the standings, Bick, if they can get a deal for the type of defenseman that they want, and if they can find something in that range, and the future's make sense to them, whether it's draft picks or prospects, I can see them doing it regardless of what they think about where they're going this playoffs, because if you can find a guy who could be an answer, the answer is going to be here for more than a few years, and I think that is something they're still looking to do regardless.
I think timelines also matter here. Again, Terrence, it's a good thought that, like, right now, if you're going to make a big trade, should they do it? And I can understand, like, not doing it, but there's 66 days to go till now to the deadline. If they make a small trade, go get a D-man, and suddenly it stabilizes and they're back into playoff position. Ask me again if there's 15 days to the deadline. So you got about 50 days here to figure this out and really give yourself a chance to say, okay, what are we actually? Mm-hmm. And if we can stabilize this and play a bit more functional, then do we have a better assessment to go out and go make a big trade, the type that Terrence is maybe fearful of? And I'm sure many others are fearful of, but today, yeah, like I wouldn't move a first-round pick today. Ask me again in mid-February.
Yes. And you know what? Like, for the whole idea of the season being lost, like, I don't feel that way at all. And I'll tell you why on the other side and why there's still so much more to play for this season. And as much as things look tough right now and as dire as things are, if you can fight through some adversity, and if you can come together and you can improve and get hot as the season goes on, you can still do something. And I think this season is long from over. They've been disappointing, but they're not done. And I'll explain more on the other side. Plus, Ian McIntyre is going to join us as a Canucks Central postgame show rolls on. Canucks lose 3-1 in Calgary on the final day of 2024. And this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Jake DeBrusk. DeBrusk right wing for Garland into the Calgary zone. Spins to the right wing, hash marks, controlling the puck. And plays back to Brännström, top of the point. Left wing, JT Miller shoots, they score! Miller from the top of the left circle fired it to the goal. Brock Besser tipped it home in front. He extends his goal streak to 4 games, and the Canucks strike on the man advantage to tie it at 1.
That is 6 goals in the last 4 games for Brock Besser. And JT Miller, after Connor Garland attacked the zone, set up shop. They move the puck over to Brännström, who gets it to JT Miller going downhill. And Brock Besser is at the ready, finding the soft area, redirecting the puck home to make it 1-1.
Just around the net, you know, that was a nice play. You know, he's good at deflecting pucks.
Brock Besser got the Canucks' lone goal, his 6th in 4 games, 14th on the campaign, but too little for the Canucks tonight. 3-1 loss in Calgary against the Flames. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We have a couple of phone calls as well that we're going to get to. What's coming in on the text inbox, Bick?
650-650. I wanted to read this one earlier. We'll do it now. Our jokes per 60... from Brandon and Poco, who's our resident Jokes Per 60 leader. Yeah. Anyways, gee, how appropriate on New Year's Eve that the Canucks would drop the ball again tonight.
That's good. Brandon, I like and Poco. That. That's really
well
good.
Played.
Well played, yeah. See, that's why Brandon's the the jokes per 60
when we are champion, on the power play and yeah. we need a jokes per 60, we our trigger guy, Brandon Nboko, is right there.
He's the Quinn Hughes of running power plays.
Ben in Vancouver, where is the adversity? Where is the tenacity this team has showed? If we do make the playoffs, we aren't going far if the boys can't string 60 minutes together. Caleb in Coquitlam, guys, as much as it hurts to say, I really don't think this team should waste their assets on a trade where they have zero leverage. Teams know the Canucks are desperate for D-men. They'll raise their prices even more, knowing that Hughes, Hronek are out. Keep your assets, sell the unrestricted free agents, and fix your mistakes in the offseason. That's Caleb texting.
So, basically, do a retool on the fly, so to speak. Trade the UFAs and pack it in on the season. I just think we're too early on to be, you know, talking about selling already. Like, you know,
it's going to be a short window here, though, when Hughes and Pettersson come back, because you need like immediate levels of engagement.
Oh,
and
yeah.
If you don't get that, if those guys come back and everyone's aware of the severity of the situation because they're out of the playoffs right now. If they come back and there's not like a spirited response, man, like you're now in shakeup territory, basically.
Well, and Alvin said maybe they are in a position where they might have to do a shakeup, right? Like he said that himself. Maybe that is what is needed. All right, we'll get to more of your texts here before the show gets out. Let's go to the phone boards. Let's start things off in Delta, where we have our friend Juggy on the line. Juggy, great hearing from you, buddy. How you doing tonight?
Happy New Year, boys.
Same to you.
Should be a great one. I agree with what you guys were saying. You know, like it's too early to really get into the sell talk, you know, and a lot of it too, I feel like, you know, as much as Calgary has had a, you know, a good hard working season, you could say, like they show up, they work hard. And I mean, that's, you know, the inconsistency of the Canucks, right? Like you'll see good performances, you'll see some odd performances where, you know, hardworking teams come in and, like they say, you know, hard work will always beat talent if talent doesn't work hard, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, I just think, though, that the Flames are, as, you know, they're not really, I'm not sold on them, you know, like I think that they're going to be good, they're going to fight right to the end, but I think, you know, like the teams that the Canucks are fighting with here, like it's going to be pretty wide open, I feel, but we'll see how this all works out. And obviously the Canucks need to start, you know, obviously stringing some wins mm-hmm. together here. Quick question for you guys before I let you go. I look at, you know, the offseason. I know a lot of people are talking about, you know, that they signed, you know, Desharnais and you know, they kept Juulsen and Myers and stuff like that. To me, I feel like this was a twofold issue. Like I looked at the season last year and I looked at the wingers that we had last year and it was, they provided some level of tenacity, but it wasn't everything that I feel like the organization was kind of looking for. Like if you look at Sherwood and you look at Danton Heinen and Jake DeBrusk and all these guys that have come in, like they've all provided something within their roles, like something that's very, very tangible that, you know, can be quietly or, you know, loudly noticed, you could say. Mm-hmm. So I guess the question is, do you guys look at it that way as well? Like, you know, this was a twofold issue. Like now you know, you can't address everything in one off season. And, you know, when I look at this team, it kind of reminds me of the New Jersey Devils of last year where they had so many injuries and, you know, their goaltending was suspect. You could look at our defense and say the same thing, you know, so in that vein, it's kind of similar. And obviously they had a bunch of injuries. So, mm-hmm. I feel like that might be pretty comparable to where these guys are at, which leads me to believe, like, you know, I think they're right there. And I think firing Tocchet would be a fireable offense. yeah. You know, but the one more thing I would say, you guys are missing out, and I posted this the other day, you guys are missing out on watching the Canucks hockey with your eyes closed, you know? Like, pastures are greener over here, man. I'm telling you.
Hey, Juggy, listen, you're fantastic, man. One of the top musicians, too, in our market. You do a great job on the anthem, and your jokes per 60 on X or Twitter is pretty straight on, man. That was a really good one the other night.
Thanks. Thanks, brother. Thank you, guys. Love you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Juggy. Appreciate the call, man. You know, obviously, they wanted to get players, as far as players they were going, going after, and you can't address all your issues in one offseason. That's true. And, you know, like we talked about this too, that there's only so much you can accomplish during the offseason. You only have so many assets. Could they have allocated the money better on the blue line? Sure. Like, you could have talked me into not bringing Myers back and done something different, but that still would have left the Canucks in a position where they need one more guy anyways. Like, you take Myers out and put in Matt Roy, for instance. Well, you're probably significantly better, right? But you're still looking at it and saying, who's going to be on your third pair? And Matt Roy and Soucy, and then your third pair is now, so who's that? Who's going to be? Is it going to be Juulsen and Forbert? Those guys. You'll still be in the same spot where you're looking to add one more guy. Now maybe you need two guys in the back end. So I don't think you could have addressed everything. And the hope had been that you do it at some point this season. That just hasn't come to fruition yet.
I think the greater error is there was not any diversity in
the blue liners.
And like I understand wanting guys that are full of size, and you saw its effectiveness obviously in the playoffs versus Connor McDavid as much as they could on the power play and all that sort of stuff. But there really isn't a secondary attribute that you're looking at with this group here right now. They all have the same profile.
Well, the only guy was Brännström, who came in a bit later, and even he's had his struggles.
And he's had his struggles too. But mobility is not really a trait amongst the Canucks blue line.
No, but also just puck moving in general.
Yeah.
You know, like even Brännström, again, a guy who's good at those things is not having success with those
things. And so when you make projections like you did with Desharnais, it's like, oh, it'll catch up to how we want it. And that doesn't happen. Suddenly, your projection was meant to be like the safety net in some scenarios. That bottom gets dropped out. And you're in the scenario that you are, where you bet on, okay, we're going to have Myers and it's going to be stable. Well, Soucy's not up to a certain level. And suddenly that feels a bit more chaotic. Forbert's missed time, but now Desharnais is not going. And Juulsen's had his struggles. And the worst case scenario is developed for the Canucks blue line and what they built the blue line to look like, which that happens. But you didn't have a counter.
Yeah.
That to me is a scenario here. It's you didn't have a plan B if this didn't work.
Well, I mean, I think no in-house plan B. The plan B was we'll figure it out during the season. But those things are always harder to do, right? And again, you only have so much money. You only have so many assets to spend. And I still believe at some point they'll add a blue liner. Like, I think they will. The question is, can it be a high enough caliber for it to really move the needle? Or are we talking about they have to find somebody to replace Desharnais?
Well, right now they might just need to do that.
Exactly.
Like, just get another credible body that's like a again, the projection for Desharnais was a 7 that can be a 6 and a 5. You just might need to find a 5 right now.
I mean, or honestly, like right now, and honestly, like I see people texting in, it's like Mark Friedman should be coming to play. I'm sure, bring Mark Friedman up, but we're going to have the same conversation after one or two games, right? Like, to me, it's a Spider-Man meme, and it's Mark Friedman, Vinny Desharnais, and Noah Juulsen.
Yeah.
And they're all pointing at each other. It's like, choose whichever one, man. But and they'll all give you good moments. But the reason they're number 7-8 defensemen and the reason they're those types of players is because they have been incapable to put together consistent 30-40 game stretches where they're playing good hockey, and they're playing you have lows, but your lows can't be costing you every other moment. And those guys, when they have lows, it's really bad. And that's where the problem lies for the Canucks too, is I'm not sure there are other options. Somebody texted in and said, why not just bring DPD up? I'm like, sure, bring those guys up, but I don't think those guys are going to be answers.
You're
like,
asking so much of young 20-year-olds here. Be like, save our season.
Yeah,
like, that's
tough.
And if it doesn't work, man, that's...
And if you want
to
talk
pressure,
made this point too. If you want to talk about draft and development, isn't developing them properly the right way to do things?
Yeah, again, it's an easy moniker to say like, oh, we're now a draft and develop team. All right, well, if you got to do that, you got to go through the development process. At first moments of peril, you can't just say abandon draft and develop. Let's go, bring you guys up here.
Yeah.
That's scary.
Those are things that happened in the past.
Yeah.
All right, let's bring in the man who is now on the line for the final time in 2024, but many more times to come. Hopefully in 2025, he is known as a triple threat. You watch him on TV, you read him on digital, you're about to hear him on radio. He is Ian McIntyre.
Good evening, fellas.
Hello.
You know, on New Year's Eve, you're with the people you care about most, and here we are.
Then what's that doing here?
Well played. Well played.
Are you guys physically together?
Yes, we are.
Yes.
All right. Okay. Yeah. You know, it's been so long since I've had so many home games that I've been in studio with you. I wasn't sure if you were always in studio on these road games, but I'm glad you guys are there.
Yeah.
I'm with you in spirit.
Yeah.
I'm kind of happy I'm actually physically in Richmond because I'm going to see my family for an hour before New Year after we're done.
See, that's good. You have a chance to do that. I'm going to go home and have a nice chamomile tea and go to bed. So I'm going to look forward to doing that coming up in a little bit.
You live a wild life, yes. Seth. My goodness.
Yeah, it's
so easy.
It's
pace
imported
yourself.
Chamomile, though. That's why, right? He went to the depths of the earth.
Yeah, and with a dash of organic honey and some organic ginger.
Stop.
And it's
help yourself.
All right. Have plans tomorrow night.
I can just picture you sat behind the bar. But instead of you like mixing a gin and tonic, you've got the grater out and you're scraping your ginger, and now you're carefully got the temperature. You probably have one of those fancy kettles that do water to the degree, so you know exactly that the chamomile is supposed to be 122 degrees or something, and then just knocking it back.
No,
crazy.
If I'm at a bar, I'm not having tea. I mean, I don't go to the bar to have tea. So no, I would never embarrass the people I go with, or embarrass myself, or people that are associated with me by doing something like that. But it is also a sign of where I am at. I am at a life. Right now, but you know, enough of
he's thriving. He's thriving.
Enough of this. Yeah. Enough of these existential crises discussions. As far as where the Canucks find themselves,
what is the chamomile tea for the Canucks right now?
Well, I mean, so you had a very revealing discussion with Patrick Alvin, which we'll get to as well. And with that being the backdrop heading into the game, what was your overall takeaway with what we saw here against the Flames?
Yeah, you know, I think they competed well. Like, for a team that has not had an identity for so many of these games this season, you know, they looked like a team with a purpose tonight. They looked like they had an idea how they wanted to get from A to B and a game plan that they were trying to execute. And, you know, I thought they played hard. You know, Calgary is one of the most impressive stories in the NHL this season. Who would have thought before the season began that they'd even be within 10 points of the Canucks? And here they were, big home game on New Year's Eve against a division rival. And, you know, they won it, and now they're a point ahead of Vancouver. I just think it's, as we all know, it's going to be such a monumental challenge for this team to generate offense without Quinn Hughes, because he's so influential. I thought it was really good that the first line, Miller looked engaged tonight, and that first line with DeBrusque and Besser, on whose shoulders there is now a mountain of expectations offensively. I thought they had a good night. I thought, you know, they did enough. I think they combined for 13 of the team's 21 shots. I thought they did enough to get a 5-on-5 goal somewhere. But, you know, at the end of the night, one power play goal is not going to be enough unless your goalie throws a shutout. And I thought Lankinen was very good as well. That was an interesting decision in itself by Tocchet to go with Lankinen, not Demko. I thought there was a lot more good than bad. But, you know, as you slip down the standings, it more and more and more just becomes a bottom line enterprise. And they've got to find ways to win some of these games. They've got to find ways to score enough to stay afloat, to not let a deficit, you know, in the playoff race, not let that deficit get to the point where suddenly there's you know, not panic, but just now you're playing. It feels like you're playing from a position of weakness. And there's that desperation and fear and stuff that I think they have to find a way to score enough to win games and keep themselves in it. But I thought their process, which is what Tocchet always talks about, I thought their process was good tonight. But, you know, just some individual breakdowns, a couple of bad plays or bad reads on the Calgary goals. But again, they only scored one themselves, and they're going to need more than that.
You know, the individual mistakes and, you know, the term was self-inflicted by Rick Tocchet. It feels like that's the prevailing theme most nights all of a sudden. And, like, I agree, like, there are elements of good process, and we've had those conversations in other games too. But you go back to those, you know, self-inflicted mistakes. Is it at times like guys are being asked to do too much?
Well, I think, you know, for example, there's definitely a place for Noah Juulsen in the NHL, but it shouldn't be, I think, on a second pairing. So, yes, but this is what happens when you're missing guys. And that pairing, until the last couple of games, Juulsen, Soucy has been very good. So, you know, I don't blame Adam Foote and Rick Tocchet for going with it. But, you know, for the question that you asked, Vic, you know, that's an example. Yes, there's a guy who's in Juulsen who's probably being asked to do too much. But I also think, you know, this wasn't the goals that they gave up tonight. This wasn't the collapse that they had at the end of the Seattle game. I mean, the Flames, to some extent, earned these goals, or at least, you know, forced the mistakes. And I think, you know, every coach, when his team gets scored on, can say, well, this was self-inflicted because this guy did this. Certainly, I think on the first goal, after Lankanen makes a save on a breakaway, Juulsen and Soucy had to do a better job of cleaning up after that save. And, you know, the 3-on-2 goal, it was terrific execution by the Flames. 3-on-2s happen. Dakota Joshua made either a bad read or a bad guess at the blue line and got caught. And Connor Garland, who I thought had about his poorest game this season, could have done more on the back check on that play as well. So there's always mistakes that go into it, but you should be able to some extent to survive some mistakes. And again, if you're only scoring one goal, then the margin for error is almost nothing. And so every mistake is going to seem bigger, but I thought they made a lot fewer mistakes in this game than they did at the end of the last one.
Well, yeah, I mean, they didn't give up the 3 goals like last. It's going to be tough to beat that one, right? Like we were joking about last game. Yeah. I mean, that's the only time we've ever seen that in Canucks history. So it wasn't historic tonight. That's certainly not a bar that they were able to reach in a negative way. But, you know, as far as the, you know, the stories are really... took the market by storm was the comments from Patrick Alvin, and great job as always to get Patrick and these guys to give you good comments on where the team is at. What was your own overarching sense from what he had to say to you about his team's struggles, what they're looking to do trade-wise? Elias Pettersson, of course, and that snippet, as you would imagine, is one that got the most attention. Like, what was your overarching takeaway from your discussion with Patrick Alvin?
Well, first of all, I you know, his comment where he said, well, you know, Jim's reputation, I think everything is on the table. Like, you know, until this team moves one way or the other, I think anything is possible. I don't, other than they're not going to trade Quinn Hughes. I'll say that. Okay. I think Quinn Hughes is safe. Other than that, I think there's a lot that's on the table, but my overarching takeaway is just that, you know, there's frustration here from management about the team's top players. And yeah, specifically about Pettersson, but I also, you know, I led the witness. I asked him about Pettersson. I didn't ask him individually about JT Miller because there's only so much time and you can only go so far, have so many questions and go so far down the list on asking about individual players. But I think there's frustration with the group. And, you know, my point, which I made in the question to him about it, was if you look at the top players, obviously Hughes has been great. Like, there's no issue there. All the other guys, which would be Besser and Miller and Roenick and who else has been injured? Someone's been injured. Anyways, these guys, Demko. Mm-hmm. They've had absences that have greatly complicated their seasons. And, you know, I thought Besser started well, and then it took him a while to get going. He's suddenly hot again, which is great. Demko isn't anywhere near the player, the goalie that he wants to be and the goalie that we expect after missing so much time. And that's probably not a surprise. And Miller, it's such a unusual situation, you know, leave of absence that we really don't know a whole lot about. And he hasn't looked fully engaged in all these games that he's been back. He's still trying to work his way back to player he was. But then you get to Pettersson, and there's not that kind of baked in reason, if you will, for why he has struggled as much as he has this season, which is why I asked about him. I would also say, though, like, you know, and I'm in the truth business, and we often don't get the truth in the truth business. So I'm really appreciative that Patrick Alvin, first of all, agreed to talk to me and then was as candid as he was. But I also think it would be naive for anybody to think, and certainly I didn't think it, that when he was telling me anything in that interview, and especially, you know, his views on Pettersson, it would be naive for anybody to think that suddenly, you know, this is something that Pettersson doesn't know or hasn't been told. You know, like most GMs, there is an ear pod permanently attached to Patrick Alvin's ear. He talks to everybody in the business, especially the other GMs, and certainly the agents that he deals with. And I know he has a good relationship with Pat Brisson, Elias Pettersson's agent, and I'm sure that they have had these discussions related to Pettersson and his preparation and what he needs to do, how hard it is to take the next step and what he needs to do. And you know what? I bet Pat Brisson agrees with him. Now, Pat Brisson probably doesn't like the fact that his client was kind of outed publicly like this, but look at who some of his other clients are, including Sidney Crosby, who's the template, it seems, for everyone when they're talking about, you know, superstar wannabe player or a potential superstar player and what he has to do and how hard he has to push year after year after year to keep getting better. And I think, you know, these are probably discussions, not probably, these are discussions that the Canucks will have had internally. We'll have talked to Pettersson about it. I don't know if Alvin personally would be talking to Pettersson about it. Certainly Alvin would be talking to Pat Brisson about it. And this is an ongoing issue. This is something that they, obviously, when they've invested $92.8 million in 8 years in a guy, they need him to take the next step. This can't be the final destination where he is right now.
I wonder, too, like how much of that is like his piece or some of his quotes. Where was it more about, you know, message sending or like declarations of intent? Because, again, it's a positive general principle to have the idea of like everything's on the table. But like, how believable does it feel?
Well, I mean, I don't think they're going to trade Elias Pettersson. Look at it that way. And I asked the question, the follow-up question was about the out in his contract, because I know that when Pettersson was struggling in this melodrama, imagined or real, between Miller and Pettersson, and people saying, well, they should trade Elias. You know, there's no protection this season. Just trade him. You know, again, realistically, the reason he has no trade protection is because he was too young. You know, the CBA, the way it's structured, doesn't allow for trade protection for this season. So he couldn't officially get it in his deal until next year. But there would have been a lot of discussion when the deal was being negotiated about what the obligations are from the side. So the two sides. So I asked the question, like, is this really a thing? Like, yes, Pettersson has no trade protection, but could this really be a thing? And, you know, at the end is when of his answer, Alvin said, well, you're asking me, is it possible? Yeah, anything is possible. You know, what's he going to, the alternative would be to say, we're never trading Elias Pettersson. And, you know, I guess he could have said that, but, you know, I think that everything is on with Jim Rutherford. I think everything is always on the table. What if the team loses throughout January and is well out of a playoff spot? Then wouldn't things change? I don't think they want to. I don't think it's ever smart to cement yourself into one position, put yourself in one corner from which there is no escape. So they're just saying, hey, anything could happen here.
Well, and I think, you know, as much as it's been very disappointing where the Canucks find themselves right now, they haven't really been healthy in the first half of the season. And we've seen teams go through adversity in the first half and then find their game and really hit their stride heading into the playoffs. And you'd much rather be playing well and finding your game heading into the playoffs as opposed to going the other way despite having a good start. So there's still a lot of hockey to be played and to be determined. And I think how these players respond, JT Miller, Elias Pettersson, I think they're going to inform the big decisions they make in the offseason.
Well, also, like, you know, Brock Besser, what is he going to be part of? What do the Canucks foresee this team being next year? Now, if it does rally and, you know, not only makes the playoffs, but goes in with some momentum, maybe they have some success, maybe they don't. But, you know, it's an entirely different conversation about where Brock Besser might fit in their future than if this team is going to miss the playoffs this year. And maybe they do make a trade and give up someone somewhere and bring in either multiple pieces or they get a younger player or whatever. There's so much that could change between now and the trade deadline with regard to what Brock Besser's place is in this team in the future, based on what that team is going to be. And I think you could apply that kind of logic to everybody on the roster. There's all kinds of ramifications, though, about if you're going to make this dramatic change in course now, having built to this point, if you're suddenly going to now reconstruct or have a major renovation. That has ramifications on a lot of things elsewhere in the lineup, including the guy that they would want to keep above all others, which would be Quinn Hughes, 3 years from now or two and a half. And they just want to make sure that at that point, they're as attractive a team as they can be so that Quinn will want to stay. And certainly he's only going to want to stay if he feels he can win a Stanley Cup here. So bear that in mind with what this management might be thinking between now and then.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a great thought, Ian, and great work as always. And we appreciate all your contributions in the year 2024 and look forward to all the ones coming up in 2025 as well. And a very happy new year and all the best from us here on Canucks Central to you heading into 2025.
Well, thank you, Sat. And it's nice to be on with friends. And it's nice to have so many people listening, drinking chamomile tea with us.
What's the move in the McIntyre household? Do you start Auld Lang Syne before midnight or after?
Well, the family's a little scattered this year. My older son's away skiing, so we may be having chamomile tea at my mother-in-law's house when I get over there. But my wife and my younger son are there, and so it'll be nice to be with family on New Year's Eve.
That's a Scottish poem, right? If I recall correctly,
nice to be with family on New Year's Eve. What's a Scottish? Oh, you mean Auld Lang Syne?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. I believe it's Robbie Burns, there but it go. Is Scottish.
Yeah.
How else could you explain the spelling of some of these words?
Welsh?
Now, Welsh is entirely different.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a
yes. Auld Lang Syne. A-U-L-D. I know it well. Sometime we could do a whole show on Scottish words. I know lots of them.
Yeah, I mean, hey, depending on how the season goes, maybe we will have time for it, but we'll see how yeah. it goes. But yeah, Ian, thanks again. Enjoy what's left of 2024.
Happy New Year, guys.
Same to you. Thank you very much. That's Ian McIntyre. Make sure to read his latest on sportsnet.ca. All right, that brings us to the end of the show. Anything else you got here, Bick?
Yeah, well, Happy New Year.
Very good.
Get home safely.
Yes.
Right? Everybody get home safely. There's sky trains are free.
Yeah.
There's no reasons to not get home safely tonight. So, yes, have your fun. Enjoy it. But please get home safely and we'll chat to you on the other side.
Hey, yeah. And honestly, like, I've been in a spot where you're like, hey, I got my car out. I drove all the way out here.
Just.
You know what you can do? You can pick your car up tomorrow.
It's a fun day. I get it. Just as much as you want to enjoy it.
Yeah.
please get home safely tonight.
Yeah, yeah. Please. Good words from Bick. Have a lot of fun. Do so safely. We can't wait to chat with you guys again. That's coming up on Thursday when the Canucks continue their quick two-game road trip in Seattle against the Kraken. Happy New Year. All the best to all of you in 2025. Hope you've had a good 2024 and all the best coming up in the new year. Special thanks to Fast Eddie Gregory. For Bick Nizar, I'm Satyar Shah. This has been the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on Sportsnet 650.